This podcast is brought to you by the Eden Pure Thunderstorm Air Purifier. The three-pack is back. The three-pack is a great value, and the top three uses for the air purifier are to eliminate odors, allergens, and air pollutants. Get the three-pack today at EdenPureDeals.com and put in code word Howie3.
The numbers are in. Listeners are voting often and early for Grace Curley, just like they did for her adopted grandfather. From year one to number one.
Make it so, number one.
The Millennial with the Mic is the most listened to midday show in Boston.
We got to bring in a new voice, a young voice, a rising voice, Grace Curley.
You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald, the Spectator, and the Daily Mail. Now, live from the Aviva Trattoria studio.
Get ready, pal.
It's Boston's number one midday show, The Grace Curley Show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to The Grace Curley Show. It is Tuesday, and that means we're joined by Toby Leary, and he can answer all of your questions, whether it be about gun control, whether it be about gun licensing. If you're curious about protecting yourself and you want to know what goes into that, Toby can answer all of your questions. Toby, thank you so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure. As always, Grace, glad to be here.
And as always, Toby, I have my own questions for you. Toby's probably getting annoyed with me because I send him things all the time asking him for his opinion on them, what he thinks of the news of the day. But Toby, before we get to that, I want to give people a chance to get on the lines. It's 844-500-4242. And if you don't mind, I just quickly want to give people a little bit of good news because I can't imagine how desperate people are for a little bit of happy information after the last couple weeks we've had. And this was a story from the New York Post I saw this morning, and I immediately just thought, wow, it is amazing what medicine can do, what the medical community in this country can do. Every cancer patient enters remission after drug trial. This was a recent drug trial. It was at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in Manhattan, and the study was conducted on 18 rectal cancer patients. Now, they had the surprising result of eliminating the disease in every participant involved. And one of the doctors told the New York Times, he said, "I believe this is the first time this has happened in the history of cancer." And then just one other part of this I wanted to add in, because I think this is very impressive. It said, in addition to not needing further treatment to eradicate the disease, there were no instances of a recurrence of cancer in the patients during follow-up appointments from 6 to 25 months after the trial ended. Very compelling results. Again, not sure where this is going to lead to, but it sounds really good, and it gives people a lot of hope. And I know everyone in one way or another has been affected by cancer. So that really brightened up my day. Now, Toby, moving on to some of the news of the day. We already have people calling in. It's 844-500-4242. I would love to get your take on these bipartisan conversations that are happening in the Senate. Now, I'm reading from CNN, Toby. I'm just going to give you a little background to this. The two leading GOP senators involved in gun talks on Capitol Hill signaled Monday evening that it's unlikely Congress will raise the age requirement for purchasing semi-automatic firearms to 21, instead saying they are looking at changing the criminal background check system to access juvenile records before a sale is complete. Give us your reaction to that, Toby.
Well, it's comforting at least to know that, you know, they're not going to fly in the face of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals that ruled it's unconstitutional to restrict 18 to 20 year olds from owning semi-automatic firearms. And they cited the 17 year olds like fought in the Revolutionary War and have fought in World War II and everything else and have been called upon many times to take up arms in defense of their country. So if we're willing to send them to die for our freedoms, then they should be able to exercise their freedoms as American, you know, men who are of voting age and whatnot. Now, I understand the mindset behind wanting to lower the age. It's a lot of times you'll hear people talk about the age of, you know, alcohol purchase, et cetera. But this is a fundamental enumerated right, and there's millions of 18 to 20 year old gun owners in this country that don't go out and commit terror in our communities, and to punish them from being able to exercise the right to keep and bear arms for the sins of the people who, you know, go out and do evil and crazy things is not fair, and we wouldn't allow that in any other area of our life. It's not logical, and you know, people want to do that. So I'm encouraged by that, and I guess I would be a little cautious about what they mean. Like if somebody is 16 or 14 and does some sort of juvenile, you know, offense, that shouldn't automatically prohibit them. But if there is some sort of mental illness there, that they are a harm to themselves or others, it would make a lot of sense to have that information passed along to the NICS check, which I've always said that we have a broken system now with the NICS, FBI NICS check. And when you put all those eggs in that basket, then at least try to make it as unbroken as possible. Have Department of Mental Health, have, you know, courts that have adjudicated somebody as mentally defective and a harm to themselves or others, rather than just relying on their honesty on a form. So I am encouraged that they're not changing the law, but at the other time, on the other hand, cautious of what they're going to now deem somebody prohibited based on juvenile activity. But, you know, cautiously optimistic that it might get better. You know, maybe it will get better if somebody is a threat to themselves or others, that now they'll be picked up by the NICS system. So,
well, Toby, the reason,
a good place to start.
The reason I love talking to you about this is because when we have this conversation surrounding gun control, it can get really heated and people can get really set in their ways, and they either want to repeal the Second Amendment or they don't want to make any progress towards anything. And what I love talking to you about it is that last time we had you on, you said something that really stuck with me. You talked about these red flag laws and you expressed your feelings of concern about that and how they could be abused. But you did say that, listen, part of the compromise is, okay, if we're going to have these red flag laws and someone abuses it, there needs to be a criminal punishment for that person who's abusing it. There needs to be accountability on both sides here so that people will be dissuaded from trying to, let's say, get back at an ex-husband or get back at an ex-girlfriend and say that person's crazy. And when you said that, I thought, wow, Toby actually is more willing to have these conversations than a lot of members of Congress and a lot of members of Senate.
Yeah, I think conversation is good and slow to change. You know, don't do a knee-jerk reaction, but let's think things through. And Matt Gaetz said it very appropriately today. I think it was today or yesterday, and when he said, imagine if Amber Heard could red flag you, would you be okay with that?
Right.
Like, are you okay with the fact that someone like that could just call and next thing you know, the police are coming to pick up your guns? That's the part that scares me. There's no due process flag laws. And I do think there needs to be a more, you know, substantial system in place for mental health screening and mental health help without a stigmatism. And that's the problem, is there's a stigma attached to people who go seek treatment. People just refuse to even seek it out who need it because they're afraid they're going to be labeled as insane or, you know, criminally insane or something like that, which probably isn't true, but at everybody's time in their life, they go through some stuff, you know?
Right.
And I hope that people would seek out the help that they need without fear of losing their rights and whatnot.
But that's a really good point. I didn't even think about it from that way. Toby, one other thing I wanted to add in here is there's a really interesting article from the New York Post. It's by Tom Suozzi, and he writes, New York already has powerful laws to prevent gun violence, but the state isn't implementing them. And he's kind of responding back to what the governor, Kathy Hochul, is talking about. She's, you know, giving herself a pat on the back for all these new laws she's trying to get passed. And the point of this article was that the legislature in New York already enacted the Extreme Risk Protection Order law that lets a state judge issue an order barring an individual from buying firearms. And after Sandy Hook, the legislature passed the SAFE Act, which, among other things, sought to prevent criminals and the dangerously mentally ill from buying guns. And what Tom points out in this article is that laws don't self-administer. They don't enforce themselves. And I'm sure when I look at what Tom's writing about, you guys would disagree on a lot of gun control measures. But something you probably could agree on is, if we have all these in place and no one actually does anything about it and they don't enforce it and the system's broken, we're back to square one.
Yeah, and laws are often reactive. They're not proactive. Like, you can't legislate somebody's heart. If they have evil in their heart and they're committed to commit evil, they're going to do it, unless there's some people in their lives that, you know, would really be there to help them. Unfortunately, that's just the way it is, whether they use a car, whether they use a baseball bat or a blunt object or their hands. Hands and fists kill hundreds and hundreds of people a year. You know, there's people that die by drowning and kids dying in swimming pools and everything else. But we don't make the knee-jerk reaction that we ban baseball bats and we ban swimming pools, only when it comes to guns. And I understand that, you know, people want to say that it's the amount of people who could be killed, but just be consistent and have integrity with the way that you you apply this type of logic and make sure that you're not just a knee-jerk reaction willy-nilly going to take people's rights away. Because once the Second Amendment's gone, then what's to stop them for the First Amendment, the Fourth Amendment? You know, look at China, look at New Zealand, look at the lockdowns in Australia. After they disarmed people, that's what they did. Even in Canada, they took all the semi-automatic rifles away 2 years ago. Here they are taking the handguns away now. And they had some severe lockdowns, and they made it so you can't even leave the country unless you're vaccinated. So they can impose their will upon you as soon as you're disarmed. And that's the original intent of our father, of founding fathers, is to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Yeah, and in this same article, speaking about the SAFE Act, which was in response to the Sandy Hook school shooting, Tom writes, one of its key components was to the establishment of a New York gun ammunition database geared toward tracking ammunition sales. And then he says, would it surprise you to learn that after 9 years, that database is still not in operation? So a lot of this talk from politicians, Toby, they can pass all the laws they want, but they don't actually put any of them into effect.
Yeah, and 95 to probably 98% of these laws only affect the people that actually follow the laws. They don't affect the people who don't care about the laws and they're criminal and they're going to break the law anyway.
All right, Toby Leary is on the line. I know we have a lot of people who want to talk to him. I just had those questions I had to get in first. 844-500-4242. Get on the line now if you have a question for Toby, and we'll be right back with more. This is The Grace Curley Show.
The Grace Curley Show will be right back. Grace Curley is your perfect lunch day.
Bread, $2 extra.
$2, but everyone in front of me got free bread.
You want bread?
Yes, please.
$3!
What?
No soup for you!
This is The Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back to The Grace Curley Show. We have full lines for Toby Leary. Today's poll question is brought to you by the Law Office of Jeffrey Miller. Everyone can go through bad times, but that doesn't mean you're a bad person. Attorney Jeff Miller represents good people in bad times. You can reach him at MillerCriminalDefense.com. That's MillerCriminalDefense.com. Attorney Jeff Miller, reasonable doubt at a reasonable price. Jared, what's the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Will Karine Jean-Pierre still be press secretary on Labor Day?
No, I do not think she will.
78% say no.
All right, let's go to David. You're first up with Toby from Cape Gunworks. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, I'm an avid gun owner. I probably own about 30 guns. I'm, you know, and I hunt and shoot all the time. But I was out with some liberals the other day, and they had a question for me, and I really didn't have an answer. And the question was, why do you need bump stocks, and why do we need 30-round magazine? I really didn't have a good an answer for them on that.
Toby, you wanna give your answer to that?
Yeah. Once you start down the slippery slope of saying there's an item that can be banned, then everything's on the table. As soon as, you know, why can't a person who's not a prohibited person, who's not a criminal, who is a responsible gun owner, be trusted with a 30-round magazine? There's tens of millions of them in this country already, and it's not like people are, you know, walking out of their front door and just spraying their neighbors down every day. You know, that doesn't happen. So, again, to take a 30-round magazine away from somebody who's not a problem because of the people who use it inappropriately is flawed logic. And there's a lot of people who, you know, use those every day in their sporting uses or defensive uses at their home or for just collecting reasons, or to, A, you know, like I keep reverting back to keeping the government, you know, in check, frankly. If we're all reduced to single-shot rifles and deer guns, then we've lost the whole argument about why we need the Second Amendment in the first place.
All right, let's go to Baxter. You're next up with Toby Leary. Go ahead, Baxter.
Hi, good afternoon, Grace. I got to talk quietly because I got a sleeping grandchild next to me. But Toby, how you doing? Just wanted to make a couple of points. Just a couple of points. And when I used to retire from Saugus PD in 20 years, and the largest amount, I remember that the Virginia Tech shooting was actually the largest amount of people killed, and that was with a handgun. And a matter of fact, we, our police department, had to provide security for the mother of one of that, with that student, was a Saugus student from Saugus at Virginia Tech, from the media. But the that terrible record is was a handgun. It wasn't even an AR-15.1. And point two is that every one of these mass killings, the perpetrators always, in some way, maybe except with one exception, maybe the Las Vegas shooting, we'll never really know. But they all, these young kids, they seem to always, they always give tells. They always somehow, it's usually on social media, somebody knows that, because they tell, they basically say, this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
Maybe they come out and say it, or they might just do it in some actions. And that's where social media platforms have got to get involved with these, with this situation, as part of a comprehensive package, along with hardening the schools to make them impregnable to, you know, this type of thing. But that's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, and Toby, I just want to add in here to something Baxter said, because in New York, the situation that happened in Buffalo, that person had plenty of red flags that should have kind of triggered whatever these background checks are supposed to do. That would have been a case where there was a record, and I'm not saying a criminal record, but there was evidence, there were things in the past where he had threatened to do that, where school officials knew that he had threatened to do that. So if people are giving all these warning signs and no one acts on it, how does that make any sense?
Yeah, and just to piggyback off what he said, he's absolutely right. The Virginia Tech shooter had a 9mm handgun and a 22 caliber handgun, which is like what I started my 12-year-old daughter off shooting with. And the irony of it is he had a few high-capacity magazines. The 22 handgun he used is a 10-round mag. The other 9mm pistol, he had several high-capacity magazines. He only loaded one magazine fully. He loaded all the rest at like 10 rounds. So he self-imposed the magazine restriction that everybody wants, that is against, you know, the Second Amendment or the gun control. And he still managed to kill more people than any other school shooting. And I think, again, once you start to say, you know, blame the object or the tool instead of the person responsible, that's where we've lost the argument as a society.
Toby, we have a lot of people who have more questions for you, so please stay on the line. 844-500-4242. We'll be right back.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
Hello, everyone. This is the Grace Curley Show. Welcome back. We're talking to Toby Leary from Cape Gunworks, and we have a lot of people on the line who have questions. Right now, Matthew McConaughey is at the White House, and he's talking about the shooting that occurred in Uvalde. That's his hometown. And he's talking about a way forward and how responsible parties seem to be coming together on some sort of path forward. I know I've read before that in this path forward could include securing schools, hardening targets, things like that. And there's also talk of, like we mentioned before, maybe increased waiting periods for people from the ages of like 18 to 21. Jay, you're next up with Toby Leary from Cape Gunworks. Go ahead, Jay.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I would like to start off by saying we are gun owners. We are actually responsible gun owners, and we take that responsibility very seriously. But that being said, my question is for Toby. The gentleman, I think it was two callers ago, that started, that asked him, he said he was asked this and he struggled with it. And Toby really went all around the question but never answered the question. And the question is, why does somebody need a magazine that just shoots off 30 or more at a time? Especially, think about this. You're not going to use it for hunting. You're really not. I can't imagine you're going to keep an assault rifle next to your bed. Certainly, as a responsible gun owner with children, I never would. So that is a major thing as to why someone needs it. And don't say it's a precursor to they're going to take away more in the future. That's not the question. The question is, why do you need it now?
Toby?
Okay, thanks for the call, Jay. And, you know, I can appreciate that not all gun owners believe the exact same thing when it comes to, you know, freedoms and the extent of our freedoms. But there's thousands, if not millions, of people that defend themselves with arms every year, a lot of times without even firing a shot. If you look at some of the home invasions that are happening in some of these inner cities with multiple attackers, I don't want to be the one left at a disadvantage to what the person coming in to kill me or kill my family has. I want to have superior firepower. I'm the guy who's the responsible guy that you don't have to worry about. I want to be able to defend myself with the best technology, with the most amount of ammunition at my disposal in the case of needing that. You know, is it likely? Probably not. But at the very, you know, any type of home invasion or situation is probably not very likely for each one of us, depending on what type of lifestyle we live or where we live. But the age-old cliche rings extremely true when you have a situation that you are in this situation, and that is better to have it and not need it than to need it and not have it. I don't want to find out, you know, when police are 10 or 12 minutes away from my house and there's multiple attackers coming in my house, that the 10-round magazine wasn't good enough. I don't want to have that situation in that moment. I would much rather have it. And if I never need it, fine. It's not harming anybody. It is being used for, you know, a freedom hobby, which is going out to the range with friends and taking my children out, shooting recreationally. But it could be called upon to defend my house or myself. And if that's the case, then I'm glad I have it. And I want superior technology to anyone who would want to harm me. That's the, and I shouldn't be penalized for the people who inappropriately use it. And we are definitely not a needs-based society. There's people driving around in, you know, $150,000 Teslas. There's people who have private aircraft. Does anybody need that? No. I'm sitting on a very nice boat right now, and nobody needs this boat. Like, it's not a need. If we're going to boil our life down to what we need food, water, shelter. Everything else is a luxury. And so I'm not willing to have somebody dictate to me what it is I need or don't need. It's a ridiculous argument. So that's my position on it. I feel very strongly about it. And because I'm not, you know, there's a 99.99% of all gun owners are responsible gun owners that you don't have to worry about. There's no reason to punish them for the sins of the ones who do.
Very good answer, Toby. And really good question by Jay. And I just want to point out, as someone who's fairly new at this, I've only been doing it for a little bit over a year. When I talk to people, I do talk to a lot of people like Jay, people who understand gun culture, who respect the Second Amendment, who might even be gun owners themselves, but do have those questions and kind of grapple with them and might disagree. I know I've had that before. I send Toby stuff all the time, and then he gives me his side and I kind of push back sometimes. And it makes me actually really hopeful if we're having these conversations that maybe the people in government could be having these conversations as well in a civilized manner And let's go to Joe. You're next up on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, Grace and Toby, how are you doing this afternoon?
Good. What's going on?
I got a question. Well, it's more of a, let me just come out with it. So a lot of the terms I've been hearing a lot lately is like weapons of war and assault rifles. I know the AR, like SKSs, the AK, and the H&Ks, and other similar rifles like those that are, they look like military rifles, but they're designed for civilian use, excuse my British. So I guess what I'm trying to ask is what your opinion is on that. I mean, I know being an ex-military person, I was told back when I was going through military training, an assault rifle, you press the trigger, more than one round comes out of the chamber. Is that not correct?
I understand the question, yes. No, it is. It's definitely a term that it was created by the gun control advocates to try to scare people into giving up their freedom and giving up their rights. AR stands for Armalite Rifle. It does not stand for assault rifle like most people think. Assault rifle is, by definition, federally a fully automatic firearm like you used in the military. There's not a standing military in the world that uses an AR-15. It is the civilian version of it. It's not fully automatic. It's semi-automatic, just like, you know, there's rifles that were invented in the early 1900s that fire semi-automatic, and they were used for deer hunting or, you know, defensive purposes at the time or sporting purposes. And so the technology goes back to the early 1900s. We've had semi-automatic rifles ever since, and semi-automatic rifles, you know, haven't changed. Massachusetts has specifically defined an assault rifle, which is piggybacking on the 94 assault weapons ban that the Clinton administration passed, but they have now defined a semi-automatic rifle with certain features an assault rifle. Assault is a verb. It's something that you do. It's, if you use it defensively, it's a defensive rifle. If you use it to kill people, it's an assault rifle. You can use the same logic in an automobile or a baseball bat. But the point is, it's a co-opted term to scare people into saying, oh, no one should have that. You know, we shouldn't have that. But really, there's no difference in the technology that's been around since the early 1900s. And there's even a legal ownership of the fully automatic rifle, which technically meets the definition of assault rifle. And those have been around since they've been invented. And yes, it's a highly regulated industry, and I think there might have been one person in the history of our country that actually committed a crime or a murder with a registered fully automatic rifle. So they're highly regulated, and they're not a problem. But we love to just throw around assault weapon, even though that's not what it is. But we're kind of stuck with the term now because it's been forced down our throat and co-opted by media outlets and everybody else. But I do try to draw this distinction whenever I can.
All right. Thank you for the call, Joe. I should note that Matthew McConaughey is live at the White House right now, and I'm getting a lot of messages from people who are saying that he's giving a pretty compelling address to the press right now, and that he's talking about his own experience growing up in Uvalde, learning how to use a gun, and telling the stories about a lot of these kids who died in the mass shooting. So I'm sure we'll have some of the sound tomorrow for everyone. But that's just an update on what's actually going on right now at the White House as we talk about these same issues here. Let's go to Dan. You're next up on the Grace Curley Show with Toby Leary. Go ahead, Dan.
Hello.
Hi, what's going on?
Yeah, hi, Grace. Hey, Toby. I was recently left a couple of guns in a will from a deceased family member, and I doubt they were ever registered. And I'd love to have them and just want to know how I go about getting them registered.
Yeah, if you were the named party in the will and they were, you know, left to you when they deceased, when they died, and they're your guns, all you have to do is go on the EFA-10 gun transaction portal and register them. It's pretty easy to do, and it doesn't cost any money. You can just Google EFA-10, and it'll bring you right to it.
All right. Thank you very much, Dan. Alan, you're next up with Toby Leary. You're the last caller of the day. Go ahead, Alan. You there, Alan? All right, we'll go to Alex. Alex, you are the last caller of the day. Go ahead, Alex.
Hi, good afternoon. Boy, there's so much to say on these subjects, but I told the screener that I called about the red flag laws. So let me give you just 10 seconds background. So I'm an attorney, and I actually got one of the earliest of these red flag law cases in Massachusetts. And exactly as Toby described, the situation was an ex-wife who used the red flag law for leverage in a very messy divorce. And unfortunately, was very successful with it twice. The thing was renewed twice. What I'd like to point out is two things that were mentioned before. One is the penalty for a false or improper motive red flag law petition. And the law actually provides for that. That's Section 131V. The problem with that is, how do you prove that the motivation was improper in the first place? Considering the way the courts work in Massachusetts, I've been doing this for a while, and just so you know, I don't touch criminal law. This is not criminal. This is a purely civil issue. Considering the way the courts work here, it is all but impossible to prove an improper motive in filing such a petition. All one has to say is there was a risk. Now, why do I say that? This is a real can of worms, and it's a big problem in Massachusetts. I know this issue actually quite intimately because I dealt with it. And that is, what is the standard in Massachusetts for issuing a red flag? And the answer is that the court merely has to find a risk. And what is that risk? That there's a risk of harm to the person himself or somebody else because they have a firearm in their possession. How do you risk? Is that the person's an alcoholic? Is that the person made threats? Is that the person is mentally ill? Is it that the person has a particular political view? Is it that the particular person is of a particular race, sexual orientation? What's the risk?
Right. And Alex, I think, and I'll let Toby finish up here and tell us where we can all go to learn more about Cape Gunworks and all of that. But I think what Alex is hitting on is a lot of what Toby fears and a lot of what people say. If we're going to implement these red flag laws, what needs to be sorted out here? Because it does seem like this system is ripe for abuse. Toby, I'll let you have the last word here and let people know where they can find you.
Yeah, thank you. That was great observation there. And we do have a ladies-only LTC class coming up at Cape Gunworks, so any of the ladies out there who want to come, we'd love to have you. And you can always come down to Cape Gunworks and see our selection and take care of your shopping needs. Father's Day is coming up, so get your dad something he's really going to want. And you can also shop online at capegunworks.com. You can also hear us on Rapid Fire, which is our 2A talk radio show about all things guns, freedom, Second Amendment, and self-defense. So that's it in a nutshell, and I want to thank you for having me on, Grace. And real quick, $6 million is the average cost of a football stadium in high schools. We can spring some money to harden the targets and for security of our kids in schools. That's what I'll leave you with.
Toby, thank you so much. I know these conversations aren't always easy, but we appreciate you coming on and going back and forth with the callers. I think it's important, and I think it shows that people are willing to have these conversations. When we come back, we'll be talking with Howard Lawrence Carr. But before I go, I wanted to tell you that oftentimes we hear about how real estate can literally sell itself right now. And this thought has been very true for many properties in this frenzied economy. However, as inflation skyrockets and interest rates rise, the demand for properties may quickly lessen. Before that happens, what can you do as a property owner to be sure you maintain strong competition and interest for your real estate? You can have an auction. For over 45 years and in every type of economy, JJ Manning consistently creates a competitive environment, strong bidding, no contingencies, and cash buyers who aren't waiting for lower interest rates. Auctions do not mean distress. They actually mean competition. JJ Manning Auctioneers can show you what strong marketing and a competitive forum will do for your real estate. To learn more on how to get your residential, commercial, or land property sold quickly, contact Charlie Gill at 800-521-0111 or visit jjmanning.com. With over 16,000 sales and satisfied clients, you can be the next one. Rising inflation and interest rates are coming, so don't wait. Call Charlie today at 800-521-0111 or go to jjmanning.com. We'll be right back with Howie Carr. This is The Grace Curley Show.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show.
Was I wearing a tiara when I came in here? Because if you happen upon it, will you have Lady Pennyface retrieve it and send it post-hence?
She's the epitome of class, style, and sophistication. She's Grace Curley.
Today's car crossover is brought to you by Toyota of Portsmouth, the house of value. When I got my RAV4 there, they took the time to get me into the vehicle that fits my needs and gave me a finance offer that I could afford. You'll love Toyota of Portsmouth, so check them out at thehouseofvalue.com. Howie Carr, thank you so much for coming on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Howie, there's a story that broke just a little while ago about what's the shakeup at CNN. We've been hearing about the shakeup for quite some time.
Yes.
And according to the Daily Mail, if certain anchors cannot get on board with a more nonpartisan kind of style at CNN, they will be fired.
I have a feeling they will make the transition, because the alternative is, would you like to supersize those fries?
Yeah, you learn to code even.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's interesting because some of the anchors named in this article are Jim Acosta, Brian Stelter, people who, according to this report, have become polarizing figures for most Americans. Can you believe that?
I don't know how polarizing they are, since nobody watches them, you know?
Well, that
I mean,
that
were, you know, it's like the tree. If the tree falls in the forest and nobody hears it, did it really make any noise?
That was my question with this January 6th thing. You had mentioned yesterday that the former president of ABC is coming in to choreograph the spectacle. And I said, why do you want a guy who runs a network that doesn't get any ratings to choreograph something when you're trying to get ratings?
Right. And when they had a chance to have a big story about Jeffrey Epstein, he sat on it.
Yeah.
You know?
And that brings us to another. That's a great point, Howie, because perhaps they're spiking some of the more important stories involving January 6th.
Yes.
Instead, trying to put up stuff that doesn't matter quite as much.
Yeah. Do you think the name Ashley Babbitt will come up in the hearing? Do you think the name Ray Epps will come up in the hearing?
You know what I think will definitely come up in the hearing? Electoral College.
Donald Trump will come up.
Oh, yeah. I have a
feeling.
Insurrection. There'll be no shortage of Donald Trump and insurrection. All right, everyone. Howie Carr is coming up next. He's got a great show planned. We'll be back tomorrow with more. This is The Grace Curley Show.